In studio with me right now, both Craig Adams and David Arredondo, our conservative political analyst. David, it is great to see you again after all these years.
Good morning, Les, and it's good to see you. We had a lot of good moments here when you had your show, and so I'm glad to be back here with you.
And I'll tell you what, we will exchange so many pleasantries off the air, but there's just so much to talk about on the air right now. We got to launch right into it. Let's talk, first of all, about Donald Trump and the debates. Let's get Trump out of the way, because I don't want to turn it into the Trump show, because there's so much more to talk about. Your take on Donald Trump?
Well, I think I was quoted in the Chronicle Telegram this morning by Brad Dickin as saying pathetic, a pathetic individual, obviously a sexist, obviously, you know, I don't know if you want to call him a racist, as far as what he has said about Mexicans and being a Mexican. You know, I certainly take that personally. But in any event, somebody said that here's the guy who said he's going to be tough with Putin and with the Chinese and the Iranians. And then he moans about Megyn Kelly being nasty to him or not liking him. I mean, he was just the pathetic, wimpy individual. All I will say about Donald Trump is he's got a hardcore of people who are behind him. They were cheering for him with some of his ignorant remarks. I believe that he is reflective of a mood in America that is very unhappy. Commentator in Network, Peter Finch, I can't remember his name, who got people to go to the window to say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. That's Donald Trump. So there are people, and John Kasich, our governor, did state that Trump was really just kind of echoing how people are frustrated with the last 8 years of the Obama administration, and they want something new.
Well, David, are people also frustrated then with Republicans who say one thing to get into office and do other things once they get into office? Because we heard, you know, if they get the House, they'll do this. If they get the Senate, they'll do this. And yet, a lot of those pledges have not been followed through.
And that question was raised
last
night.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, Craig, that is, in fact, a reality. I think what you're seeing is two types of Republican settings. One is Congress, in which the GOP just got back the Senate. So prior to that, it only had the House. It's got a Senate and a House, but it's got a president who's got veto power to stop, you know, most of whatever Republicans want to do. But there is still a frustration on the part of the base that, you know, they said they're going to do this and it's not getting done. So I don't disagree that is the case. On the other hand, there is another set of Republicans in states where we have 30 governors and about 25 legislatures in which things are getting done. And the state of Ohio with our legislature and the governor is a very good example of how Republicans are thriving.
Now, we just had a national report, and the question was, who came out as the winner? Who appeared to be the winner? And the one national political analyst said, John Kasich, not to be a homer here, but he said John Kasich, he seemed to be the grown-up on the stage last night.
I believe that if you look at any, if you look at 10 different analysts, you'll get 10 different winners. I'm seeing some consensus on Marco Rubio being the winner. I got to see Marco Rubio up close and personal on Wednesday.
Well, I've got it right here. I've got it right here.
You got
on
the
my
picture
phone.
On your
I,
phone.
I see his Facebook page, and let me go to this.
With the selfie of me and Marco, and I'm frustrated because it wasn't working. But anyway, Marco showed himself very well on the debate stage. He looked presidential. He's been likened by many to John F. Kennedy. About the same age, I think he's 44. Kennedy was 43. He's got a future, a forward-looking appearance, and as some people described him on stage, as presidential. Here's a take that I have that I told you that was original. rather than seeing these guys competing against each other, I see them competing against their ideological group. So, for example, on the right, we have Trump, we have Huckabee, we have Carson and Cruz. They're feeding from the same voter group that is on the right. So essentially, they're trying to get votes from each other, not necessarily from Bush, because Bush voters aren't going to vote for Huckabee or Cruz and vice versa. So that's one group. Who won out of that group? I think it was a draw. I think they all did. They have all of their supporters. On the center right, we have Walker and Rubio. And out of those two, Rubio did better than Walker. Walker didn't hurt himself, but he was number three in the standing, and you know, he didn't move up, he didn't move down. And then on the center left, we have Bush, we have Christie, and we have Kasich. And among those three, Christie and Kasich probably did better than Bush. And then the last person is Paul, and I don't see him going up in the polls. If anything, he may not be on the stage next time.
844 WEOL. So you were saying that Donald Trump, he does speak from shoot from the hip. He does say what a lot of people are thinking, yet there's that whole brash element that may end up being his downfall. So the question is, who is the eloquent Donald Trump in this race? Who is the person most likely to deliver and say the things that Donald Trump says, but in the way that you would want a president to say them?
Actually, Ted Cruz is the first one to come to my mind. I think he and Carson and Huckabee. Huckabee, I thought he looked very well. Cruz did extremely well. And you got to hand it to Ben Carson. I mean, he's a very intelligent individual. He talked about putting race aside, and that. We all think with a brain, and he's operated on any number of brains, and there's no color. There's no color on the inside.
And he was sincere.
Yeah,
too.
He was very sincere. So I'd be interesting to see how the votes do the polls do shake out.
David, I get emails from the Democratic National Committee, and I got a load overnight. Fact check this, fact check that, and then a statement on the debate from Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the DNC chair. Now, I'd like your response to this. Among the biggest losers of tonight's debate were American women, who were attacked at every turn. We failed to hear any solutions for income equality, and not even a single mention of college affordability, equal pay, raising the minimum wage, or the Voting Rights Act on its 50th anniversary.
Well, the Voting Rights Act on its 50th anniversary is clear that there are no barriers to voting. And if anything, we have a trial right around the corner here, which shows how low we have lowered the bar to try to get anyone and everyone imaginable in the door to try to vote. And so this notion that there's anything that is similar to poll taxes or actually barring people on the basis of race is utter ridiculousness. And the Democrats are living in the past. They keep referring to things in terms of racial divisiveness, of polarizing the country. They're going to have candidates that are of the past. What we had on stage is the future of our country. That is a leadership that is representative of our country. Two Cuban-American immigrant sons were on that stage. That's remarkable. A woman who started as a secretary moved up to be a CEO of a major Fortune 500 company. A black man who is a neurosurgeon who also came up from humble beginnings. You want diversity? The diversity now lies in the Republican Party. And what do the Democrats have? The Democrats have people of the last century, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden. I mean, I'll take what we have as far as looking to the future to whatever the Democrats have to put out.
Let's talk, David, about that first debate, the one that was held at 5 o'clock. A lot of people think Carly Fiorina came out of that looking the best?
I have to say that I wasn't able to see most of the debate because I was in transit getting to the House of Blues where we had the debate watch. But I saw the last half hour of it, and again, that was just a small portion. But after the debate and after she did all of her post-debate interviews, she came over to the House of Blues, stood on stage, no script, 20-minute extemporaneous speech, and it showed why she did as well as she did in the debate. She really showed well in that 20-minute segment. Conversely, Rick Santorum also came on the stage and did 20 minutes, and we couldn't wait until it was over. Carly Fiorina, if this was a play-in game, won the play-in game and should be on the stage for the next round of debates.
So you talked a lot about some of the people who you did like. We didn't touch on everybody. So is there anybody maybe you didn't touch upon yet that maybe we should talk about?
Well, I think that Chris Christie really helped himself. Needless to say, let me give me some talking points here on the governor. You know, our governor entered the race late. He was on the cusp of whether he was going to make the stage or not. He and Chris Christie were actually the last two who qualified. And it was a stroke of genius on launching the campaign as late as he did. He came across very well. Obviously, he had the home field advantage, and that was very helpful. The crowd was chanting OHIO during one of the breaks, but came across very sincere. I saw some analysts attribute him as the winner. I think it might have been Matthew Dowd who said that. He looked presidential. So I have to think that wherever he was in the polls before, he's definitely going to go up.
David, you mentioned the crowd. How did one get to be in the audience?
Okay. As you know, there were a limited number of tickets. There were about 4,000 seats. So although there are 20,000 in the queue, only 4,000 were used. The Republican National Committee and Ohio Republican Committee dictated who got the tickets. They largely went to donors and to elected officials. I saw Amherst Oberlin Congressman Jim Jordan there. And so party officials from Cuyahoga County did get tickets. And I think they then put out, 1,000 or 1,500 tickets to the public randomly. And they threw in a lottery. And so there were people that I know that got picked to attend. So that's how it was distributed.
A lot of good people said a lot of good things. If you had to pick, I mean, who in your opinion is the one who ultimately is the one to watch? Because they're not all going to make it. And I'd like you to include the first seven as well, because there's probably people from the first seven mm-hmm. who might come up, and mm-hmm. maybe one or two from the top 10 who are going to step down.
Mm-hmm. I think there are two people. One is the governor, because he's competing with Chris Christie and with Jeb Bush. I don't think Jeb helped himself at all. As much as he might want to distance himself from his brother, I have to say that W was a lot more likable and personable than Jeb is. But
one of the analysts actually said was, when I look at Jeb Bush, I see a president. The problem is, I see President George W. Bush.
Well, I mean, I think maybe in some respects he wishes that, because because then the right at segment of our electorate would be voting for him. So I see the governor, I think, doing well down the line, and Marco Rubio. I just cannot stress enough. And people randomly telling me, just out of the blue, I like Marco. Democrats that I run into, some, I like Marco. Those two.
How about the next debate? When will that be? Where will it be? Any idea what the format will be?
I really don't know, and we do need to look that up. But I know that we're going to have a watch party here in Lorain County.
Do you think Carla is going to step up?
I fully expect that she is. As I had said before, she won the play-in game. And
you said you were pretty close to her in proximity.
She spoke at a House of Blues for the American Conservative Union where I was, and I was just a matter of feet away from her. I got a very good close-up shot of her, and that's on my Facebook page. But she gave a 20-minute unscripted speech in which she sounded sincere, knowledgeable, and I fully expect that people are going to embrace her.
Regardless, David, of any candidate, any party, I don't care. I'm with you. I don't want any teleprompters. I don't want any scripts. I don't want any note cards. Tell me what you know. Tell me what you believe in. And we'll judge for ourselves.
You're absolutely correct. And I think the candidates that come across the best are those who do that. And I keep going back to Marco Rubio as one who is unscripted. I saw him give a 30-minute speech Wednesday, and no cards, no notes, just straight from the heart.
We've got probably about 45 or so seconds left. At what point do you think Donald Trump may burn out?
I think he's going to be around for a while because he's got a hardcore group of supporters. Not to mention that I think that he's got some Democrats who are stuffing the ballot boxes of the polls to keep him as a disruptive force in this race. So it's going to be a matter of when he comes into the primaries, Iowa, New Hampshire. And again, keep in mind that he's going to be competing for votes from all of the candidates, but mostly from those on the right, the Carsons, the Cruz, and the Huckabees. So wait till the votes start coming, and we'll see how long he goes.
David Arredondo, so much to talk about, so little time. Thank you so much for coming in this
morning. Thank you very much for having me, Les, and hope to see you again soon.